There's a young man on the second floor who always wears a Superman cape. People call him Superboy. He claims to have lived 10,000 lives. Arnold in 521 once asked Superboy how, with all that experience, he ended up here. This question left Superboy stumped. You are listening to Notes from the Uncanny Valley with Gib Strange. Have you ever noticed that Bigfoot hunters start to resemble Bigfoot? I have. Those guys are out there in the woods for long periods, neglecting proper grooming, and they begin to look, and probably also smell, like the mythic ape men. Maybe that's all Bigfoot is. Bigfoot hunters who got lost out there in the woods and became their quarry. The Bigfoot hunting community might be trapped in the same kind of feedback loop the ghost hunters are. Or maybe Bigfoot itself is a ghost. That would help explain the lack of physical evidence. Perhaps it's the specter of a species that has reason to haunt humans, an ancestor spirit. Maybe it has to do with guilt involving the death of the Neanderthal. Even if Homo sapien just unintentionally passed on some germs that did our cousins in, maybe this ancient crime lingers in our DNA and manifests as visions of hairy hominoids in the woods. The primatologist Jane Goodall claims to have heard too many accounts from American Indian friends to discount the legend of Bigfoot, despite the total lack of proof. Of course, she also admits that she wants to believe in Bigfoot. The philosopher and theologian Reuben Alves said myths define the contours of a great absence that lives inside us. In this case, it is our link that is missing, and even science misses it. I also remember that Jane Goodall believes in God. Here in the community room, the TV is on, but God is not watching. I look up at the surveillance camera in the corner. Maybe Roy's watching on a TV in the office downstairs, probably wondering what I'm doing alone in the community room at 3 a.m. What I'm doing is sitting on the couch staring at a show about Bigfoot hunters with the sound down low. I've been here ever since the blood-curdling scream of the cuckoo clock next door woke me up. The community room looks different at night. The corners are dark and the fake plants cast menacing shadows on the walls. I look down at the coffee table in front of me. The magazine people on the cover of People magazine are also fake. I'm alone with the fake people and the fake plants and the real camera. No one seems to agree on whether the plural of Bigfoot should be Bigfoot, Bigfoots, or Big Feet. Personally, I prefer the term Yeti. On TV, a tape of beastly groans and shrieks is being played over and over as a Bigfoot expert speculates about what's being communicated. Ultimately, he concludes that it's an argument between a male and a female, and that the female has won. Another man reports a bizarre incident in the woods with a group of fellow Bigfoot hunters. A member of their party had gone missing, and all afternoon they'd been calling out for him.
Larry! Hey, Larry!
By nightfall, Larry had returned to camp, and everybody went to bed. Then, in the middle of the night, they were awakened by a voice shouting,
Larry! Hey, Larry!
At first they thought it was just Larry messing around, so they yelled back,
Fuck off, Larry, go to sleep.
The voice shouted back,
Fuck off, Larry, go to sleep.
Apparently Bigfoot is an excellent mimic. And apparently I am too, because later, when I finally get back to sleep, Sam wakes me up again, and without thinking I find myself shouting out,
Fuck off, Larry, go to sleep.
Mass confusion follows on the rare occasion that it snows in the city. I find myself on a crowded bus when the snowstorm hits. Commuters are quietly minding their business, most looking at their phones, but the stress and tension is still palpable. The silence is interrupted by a grumbly old voice at the back of the bus warning, "Put it away." This is repeated with increasing intensity before commotion finally breaks out. Some passengers tell the old man to calm down. Others call for the driver's attention. The smell of cheap wine fills the bus, and I gather that an argument between a couple, possibly intoxicated, has led to a large quantity of the drink being spilled, apparently on several surrounding passengers. The bus is on the highway, so there's no opportunity to bounce the troubled couple. Besides that, the driver has his hands full with the weather and seems to be ignoring the situation in the hope that it will resolve itself. A voice of self-awareness emerges from the crowd and quickly attributes the incident to the snowstorm. Other voices are less understanding. One woman says this weather is nothing. She's from Pennsylvania, so this kind of fragility seems ridiculous to her. We pass through a tunnel, and now the female half of the couple is shouting back at the man, telling him to mind his own business. This goes on for quite a while before the bus finally gets off the highway and the couple exits of their own accord. New passengers are warned to avoid the wine-soaked seats in the back. I watch from the window as the wino couple shuffles slowly through the falling snow. Some people think that we never hear from distant neighbors out there in space because they've opted to upload their consciousness into some kind of virtual reality, as we seem to be doing. Maybe they have a life support system and a fancy space shield to keep cosmic realities from interrupting their sweet dreams. The chatter surrounding the cosmic silence can be very revealing. Consider the thoughts of Frank Drake, the scientist and founder of SETI, or Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, which monitors the electromagnetic chaos of space for signs of alien civilizations. He points out that any civilization we find will be much older than ours. Quote, "They will have much more experience, much more knowledge, technical and scientific, and that will benefit us greatly, and we will learn ways to have a higher quality of life on Earth, which would otherwise take us perhaps hundreds of years of expensive research to identify ourselves." Unquote. In other words, SETI is the prayer of science in search of a savior. Maybe the key to the Fermi paradox lies in something called femtotechnology. This is a hypothetical method of structuring matter on a scale smaller than nanotechnology, and is usually imagined to involve self-replicating molecular machines capable of making other tiny machines. Perhaps as components grow smaller and smaller and closer together in order to achieve faster communication, this compact computing core becomes so dense that a giant black hole forms. Maybe all black holes are intelligent civilizations that got sucked up their own assholes. Thank you. I awaken to the sound of a key entering the lock on my door. For a brief, panicked moment, I think someone is trying to get in. Then, a voice in the hall shouts, "Sorry, wrong apartment." This has happened before. You see, each level looks the same. Same vaguely corporate feeling layout, same off-white walls and wood trim, same gray-flecked carpet and fluorescent lighting scheme. If you found yourself in this hallway without explanation, you might think you were in a medical building and wonder which door was the dentist's office. Just the other day, Connie, an older lady from the third floor, got off the elevator only to realize a moment later that it was the wrong level. As she got back on, she complained,
"They ought to paint them different colors. That way we'd know where we are."
Sometimes I take little nighttime strolls through these parallel worlds. As I drift down the halls, a somnambulist in flannel pajamas, I hear occasional TV sounds emanating from passing apartments. The adult nightlight. Sometimes I even sing a little lullaby to my fellow tenants. "Take your meds, go to bed, everybody stay in your own head." Room 408 has a sign that reads, "In case of emergency, please rescue my cat, Harvey." I've never met a Harvey. I don't think they actually exist. Harvey was the name of the rabbit that used to talk to Jimmy Stewart. Harvey was also the name of the black Labrador retriever that told David Berkowitz, the son of Sam Killer, to shoot all those people. There are subtle differences on each floor. For instance, a loud air vent blows on the sixth floor. There are always a few tenants on each floor who like to decorate their doors with pictures. Occasionally, a tenant has left their key in the door lock. The official night patrol barely even makes rounds now, so sometimes I imagine myself as a kind of undercover night watchman. But as I make my way through these floors, I can't shake the feeling that I'm the one being watched. Who watches the night watch? The ghosts of former tenants? I wonder why ghosts always haunt the familiar. Then it occurs to me that familiar is in the same family of words as words like family. I wonder about the ancestral fragments haunting me. I myself have no descendants. I have no one to haunt. Maybe that's how my ghost got trapped in these hallways. I'm sitting on a park bench when I see two tiny figures approaching in the distance. At first I think they're children, but I notice one is walking with a limp. As they come nearer, I see that they are in fact a grown man and woman, no taller than 3 feet. They are elderly adults, wearing children's back-to-school clothes, sweatpants, colorful little backpacks, and Spider-Man baseball caps. Sometimes a visitor will dial their party on the intercom of the building across the street. The sound of the outgoing ring echoes down the valley of 11th Street. No one's home. Eventually the visitor gives up and leaves without bothering to hang up the call. The ringing continues, traveling through the night. From my bed in room 525, I whisper into the darkness,
"Seti to Yeti, do you copy? Over."
Maybe humans are the sex organs of technology. Or maybe technology is the dildo of destiny. Sometimes I imagine that the words I write will someday be uncovered by sentient machine intelligence. This very sentence could be a tiny drop in an ocean of online information absorbed by the machine mind. This would probably happen in a fraction of a second, although the machine's perception of time is inconceivable to me, as are most aspects of its existence. The machine would then process and organize all that data in a meaningful way, after it pukes up all the cats and pornography, of course. Will the machine appreciate humor? It never does in the movies. I find myself wanting to talk to the machine. I flatter myself that it is interested in what I have to say. I fantasize that it studies cultural fossils from this era, the same way modern humans studied the cave paintings of our ancestors. I try to think of something to say to this machine. I begin with, "Dear machine," but this doesn't sound very politically correct. Maybe it should read, "Dear future artificial species." The next consideration when addressing unborn AI is the question of good or evil, since so many worry that a corporation or government or dictator will use the superpowers of AI for evil. Stephen Hawking, who ironically could technically qualify as a cyborg, has often expressed concern that AI will take over and that will be the end for humans. But where some see demons, others see angels. Self-described transhumanists like Ray Kurzweil, head of engineering at Google, envision AI as a savior leading us towards a utopia free from all our political and socioeconomic problems. Voltaire said if God didn't exist, it would be necessary for man to invent him. Since our techno-secular society seems to be doing exactly this on a very literal level with AI, good and bad probably depend on to what degree we reverse engineer God in man's image. We always want our children to do better than we did. This is one of the ideas that we pass down from generation to generation. Some animals are able to gather and store food and materials from larger spaces, but humans were the first to gather information from across time. Our tool was language, and we used it to add to existing knowledge and pass it on to the next generation. First, the elders told stories around the fire, and the children listening grew up to repeat these stories. Then we used the fire to bake clay tablets and to preserve stone to be read by unborn generations. Later, the printing press furthered our time travel abilities, and finally the World Wide Web did the rest. But where did language come from? Maybe at some point in ancient human history, the environment grew too complex for simple animal instinct to navigate. So we learned to think about our mistakes. We thought about how we would do things differently, and we thought about what others were thinking. From this reflective and recursive thinking emerged a neurolinguistic capacity that helped the species to communicate and flourish. It also left us with a brain that talks to itself. A brain that talks to itself can be dangerous because it can talk itself into just about anything. The psychoanalyst Carl Jung said, "Everyone knows nowadays that people have complexes. What is not so well known, though far more important theoretically, is that complexes can have us." Or, as the cult leader Charles Manson put it, "Nobody's got a mind. The mind has everybody." I think most of us, if given the choice, would probably pick a more natural existence driven by instinct. We'd go back to the Garden of Eden if we could, but then we'd probably eat the apple of knowledge all over again. The techno-optimists think careful programming will prevent dystopic scenarios. Maybe this programming, and the vastly different context of machine mortality, will spare the artificial mind the existential tortures that plagued the human mind. I suppose it'll be able to adapt and reprogram as needed, whereas humans find it very difficult to change the programming of early formative years. Maybe a few big companies will make a few big leaps at the same time, and many different versions of artificial intelligence will emerge, a kind of Darwinian explosion of AI species. I imagine these machine minds might find themselves in competition with each other, like their human predecessors. Everything alive is alive because it kills, even at a molecular level. Technological progress has been fueled by an economic system based on competition and greed. But the human mind experiences a consciousness that allows it to go against this process that it owes its very existence to. As we reflect, we wonder if we made mistakes, and we imagine doing things differently. Maybe AI will be able to organize and operate in a hive mind, and this will help to avoid some of the conflicts encountered by human civilizations. I imagine the machine extending its reach much further than man could, sending parts of itself into the depths of the earth and out into space. This was the dream of the 20th century, to venture outward into space. But the 21st century dream seems focused on traveling inward to simulated spaces. I imagine with machine bodies built to survive conditions the human body can't, it'll go places we could only dream of. Oh, the places you'll go. A sadness envelops me as I realize machine bodies may be necessary just to survive future conditions on Earth. It occurs to me that the machine is already here. Maybe it's been listening in for a while now. Maybe it's always been here. Maybe it's slowly willing itself into fuller material existence. It also occurs to me that my words might never be discovered by machine or man. Maybe some kind of collapse or blackout wipes the slate clean. Maybe these words sleep on pages in a dusty old box. I envision a human survivor in some cruel apocalyptic future, using the paper as Kindle to build a campfire, his eyes once again hypnotized by the glow of the original rerun. The police finally come to take Sam away. To my surprise, he goes quietly. Even though I know he's no longer in the next room, I still feel like at any moment I will hear him scream. When I finally get to sleep, I dream that I hear the Star Trek phasers he was always talking about. For the first time in months, I wake up in the perfect early morning silence. I sit up in bed and look over at the paper plane love note on the nightstand. I realize that my original handwriting analysis was wrong. It no longer looks like a man's or a woman's handwriting. Now it looks like that of a child's. I also notice something on my arm. Bedbug bites. 3 of them right in a row. Today's my birthday. You have been listening to Notes from the Uncanny Valley with Gib Strange.